Okay, so briefly on Matthew Perry, it turns out they busted some people that were complicit in providing and injecting Matthew Perry with ketamine. A doctor and his personal assistant and a few other people were charged, and clearly they were all milking this troubled rich actor to enrich themselves. And yes, if you really want drugs and have the money, you'll always find someone to buy them from. But like, one of these guys was a doctor, and it's like, man, show some respect. They were overcharging Matthew Perry for the vials of ketamine, including some like veterinarian ketamine, probably from Mexico. And in one text exchange, two doctors text, "I wonder how much this moron will pay." And the other guy says, "Let's find out." It's like, is that all this is all about, is money? This sad addict, Matthew Perry, who beat several addictions only to fall prey to another addiction, and you guys just wanted to make more and more money on some desperate guy. And fuck the personal assistant, too. He was the one injecting Matthew Perry. It's like, yes, there's always some person that will do anything for money. But hey, you know, you don't have to be that person. At some point, the right thing to do would be like, okay, man, you know what? I can't do this. I know you'll find someone else to do it. I know. But it's not going to be me. I wish you the best. But anyway, these guys will do some jail time, and I hope they will have plenty of time to think about what they did and the impact it has. You can always do the right thing, you know, and addicts will always be addicts, you know, and I speak from experience. You always have to replace the addiction with some other one, you know, like a possibly a, or hopefully a healthy addiction. That's why so many ex-addicts become athletes or extreme runners or whatever. There's got to be something to fill the void that the addiction created. And plus, man, all this stuff, psilocybin, MDMA, ketamine. I mean, yes, maybe there's some benefit to using this stuff, but ultimately it all can be dangerous because, man, it's pleasant. It's enjoyable, and all of that shit can be addictive. You take enough of it, and man, you can pleasantly drop out for a good 8 hours, and we all crave that sometimes. Every once in a while, I just need to take a day and be like, okay, you're going to be blotto from something all day today. And I know I've been in that spot many years ago where I have been like, oh, shit. Did I just do too much of whatever substance? Matthew Perry has a quote, "I can distinctively remember holding pills in my hand and thinking, this could kill me, and taking them anyway." I mean, that's the darkness of addiction, and you kind of just live with addiction, and you fight it until the end, and unfortunately, like so many others, Matthew Perry lost that battle, but hopefully he's at peace now. Okay, what do we got on the menu here? Okay, come on, welcome to Schipollini's. Oh, wait, what? Okay, seriously. On the menu. Some more talk on drinking, a French farewell, some songs, some movies, some savoir-faire. And remember, savoir-faire is everywhere.
You are my density, you are my density.
And it's funny, when I pull into my parking spot at my apartment after a long day of work, I park my car. And then in my car, I just crack open my first White Claw, and then I get out, I get my backpack, and I start walking to my apartment and start drinking. And there was like this little kid walking around with his family. I glanced at him, and he said to his mom, "He's drinking a big soda. I want one." And it just kind of made me smile, and I'd had the worst day at work. I said to myself, "Kid, enjoy your innocence and drink your real soda, okay? Because soon enough, you'll be in the same boat as me, trying to get some relief from the day's woes." And yes, quickly, I did post last week's episode a day too early. I had a few drinks while I was setting up the publication time, and hey, I fucked it up. Ah, the long-known rules of life. Never mix podcasting with alcohol. And let's talk about drinking for a bit here. And sorry, when I think of drinking, I always think of John Cassavetes, the cigarette-smoking alcoholic kind of genius who died of cirrhosis, and his wife, the legendary Jenna Rollins, just died recently. And I'm sure she will be buried next to her beloved John Cassavetes at Westwood Pierce Brothers Memorial. And there's just a devastating scene in the 1974 movie, A Woman Under the Influence. Wow, what a title. Directed by John Cassavetes. It's about Jenna Rollins, who plays a somewhat mentally ill woman, and the relationship with her husband, the great Peter Falk, also in Westwood Memorial. It's just such a raw, real, and kind of perfectly acted movie. There's a moment where Jenna Rollins is talking to Peter Falk, and in one of her clearer moments, she says, "Tell me what you want me to be. How you want me to be. I can be that. I can be anything." I mean, how touching is that? This is one of those movies that I absolutely adore, but I wouldn't want to rewatch. Sometimes you just see a movie and have such an intense time with it, it's like, wow, that was wild, that thing hit me, but I don't need to see it again. But yes, back to drinking. The huge Hollywood character George Burns had the hilarious quote, I don't have a drinking problem. I drink. I get drunk. I fall down. No problem. Pretty good. And yes, George, falling down is not a problem unless you fall down and hit your head on the coffee table, a la the just flat-out awesome William Holden. And that's the way he died. He was drinking and fell, and he bled out on the floor in his Santa Monica condo, just a stone's throw away from where Christopher Penn, Sean Penn's brother, died. And get ready for another comic giant and big-time drinker, Jackie Gleason. He famously said, "Some drink to forget, some drink to remember. I drink to get bagged." Nice one, Jackie. And I thought of something the other night. I drink to forget when I forget to drink. I'm not totally sure. I think that's clever. I don't know. What's your opinion? And hey, why not another Jackie Gleason quote? Drinking removes warts and pimples. Not from me, but from those I look at. And hell, let's close that with a great one from a massive drinker, Ernest Hemingway. I drink to make other people more interesting. There's certainly some truth in that, Ernie. And this never fails to crack me up, I swear. Benjamin Franklin himself made up like a shitload of phrases or synonyms for being drunk. Some of them are just weird as shit. And I'm like, Ben Franklin, you fucking genius, you. But here's a few of them. His head is full of bees. Or has stole a manchet out of the brewer's basket. I have no fucking idea what Ben meant with that shit, but I love the sound of it. And oh my god, another similar weird as fuck one is, he's had a thump over the head with Samson's jawbone. It's like, what? A few more. Sir Richard has taken off his considering cap. I love that phrase, considering cap, and like taking it off. Here's one. He's been too free with Sir John Strawberry. Or, he's contending with the Pharaoh. And the classic, he makes Virginia fence. Okay, whatever. I don't know what the hell he's talking about. And back to falling down. We must mention the movie Falling Down with Michael Douglas as a stressed out dude in Los Angeles who kind of loses it trying to get to his daughter's birthday party. It was directed by Joel Schumacher. It's got some classic Los Angeles scenes, but I didn't really love the movie. To be honest, I'm more of a Jeff Bridges guy than a Michael Douglas guy, but it is just one of those movies you have to see. You know, it's on that list. And yes, I'm making a list and checking it twice. Actually, I'm checking it thrice because I tend to fuck up lists. But yeah, speaking of falling down, there's this classic fucking band from Los Angeles called NoFX. They have a great song, Linoleum, from the 1994 album Punk in Drublic. Nice title there, guys. And the song is about the comforts of resting your head on the floor, and haven't we all slept on the floor at some point for whatever reason? What? You say you haven't? Well, goddammit, go rest your head on the floor. No, I'm serious. Go do it. Listen, I'm just going to wait here until you do it. Yes, yes, that's it. Get up. Yes, over there. Yes. Okay. Okay, get down. Yes. Okay, your head on the floor. Okay, there you go. Okay. I knew you could do it. Jesus, can we move on here? But anyway, yeah, listen to Linoleum, and there's a knockout live performance where the guys are just at their peak brilliance. They're young, energetic, and just absolutely have fucking personalities. The guys are smart and so goddamn Californian, like in the best possible way. They're telling some jokes to a pretty huge crowd. The audience isn't really getting it. And the lead singer says, "These jokes up here, they're hilarious, really." I mean, I just love that. Here's a little bit of that song. I've got pockets full of Kleenex and linen holes where everything important to me just seems to fall right down my leg and onto the floor. My closest friend, Linoleum, Linoleum, supports my head, gives me something to believe, Linoleum. And quickly, there's a line where the lead singer would do a switcheroo when playing live. The line is singing gibberish, but when on the live performances, he would say singing GBH. And then in later performances, he would say singing GHB. Then there's also a line about his dog named Bob who pisses on his floor. On live performances, the lead singer would often say he has a dog named Dog. And speaking of performing to big crowds, you can't get any bigger than the legend and probably asshole in real life, Frank Sinatra, who just has a brilliant live performance at the Sands Hotel and Casino in Vegas. Get this, with music by Count Basie and his orchestra, and get this, arranged and conducted by Quincy Jones. I mean, that is just so staggeringly over the top. It's mind-blowing. But it is a great record. And Frank Sinatra just has the ultimate classic line, and as he's walking on stage, he says to the crowd, "How did all these people get into my room?" Flat out, utterly pro. My dad loves Sinatra, but had an equal love for Count Basie. I mean, we're talking about some goddamn mythological figures here almost. I saw Count Basie play at the Concord Pavilion. Now it's called the Toyota Pavilion. Man, what a band. Totally amazing. And I think my dad kind of knew the drummer at the time. I think the guy's name was Greg Field. Anyway, there's one other great NoFX song, and briefly on FX. FX is just a fantastic movie from 1986 with the two Brians, Brian Brown and Brian Dennehy, although Brian Brown spells his name B-R-Y-A-N, and Brian Dennehy spells it B-R-I-A-N. It's an utter classic. Brian Brown is a special effects guy who helps the FBI and gets embroiled in a serious mess. It's clever, funny, and just kind of effortlessly, holy shit, enjoyable. And of course, you all knew I was going to fuck up the word effortlessly. It just makes sense. But anyway, FX is directed by Robert Mandel, and good job, man. Oops, pardon the pun. Mandel, man, get it? Anyway, good job, dude. Okay, where the hell were we? Are we still in Saigon? But yeah, the other NoFX song is called Lori Myers, and its highlight is just mind-blowing vocals by the dearly departed and just truly missed character Kim Shattuck. I fucking love the Muffs. They can make any day better. But yeah, the song is a fictional tale about some girl the singer knew who later on became a porno actress. But the lyrics are kind of badass, and they're from the perspective of this woman who took control of her life and, yes, decided to become a porno actress. But it just has the absolute classic line, "You think I sell my body, I merely sell my time." I mean, that's goddamn brilliant. But here's a little bit of that song. "I know what degradation feels like, I felt it on the floor at the factory where I worked long before. I took control, now I answer to me. The 50K I make this year will go anywhere I please. Where's the problem?" And that ending is just so good. "The 50K I make this year will go anywhere I please. Where's the problem?" Holy goddamn, I love that. And yeah, though in this song, this woman became empowered, porn has just become such destructive shit. It's all over the internet. It's a lot of like hardcore degrading stuff, and there's just a complete underlying ugliness to it. It's our worst instincts on full display in HD. I'm sure it's warping kids' minds, too. They see all this extreme fucked up shit, and they don't even realize what's normal anymore. And probably some girls are like, "Oh, that's how sex is supposed to be? So yeah, I'm supposed to be choked?" And it's like, no, you're not supposed to be choked. That's not fucking normal. I mean, okay, with two consenting adults or three or whatever, it's like, okay, do whatever the hell you want. Whatever, you know, you guys are all good with, whatever. Stick 8 Barbie dolls up your asses. But porn is just ugly stuff with a twisted and ugly side of like masculinity. And to be honest, I rarely watch porn these days. I usually just make withdrawals from the previously mentioned Spank Bank of the West. There's only one branch, and it's in my brain. I mean, there's so many guys out there that are just absolute slime. And, you know, for all of my jokes, all of my crudities? I think that's a word, I hope. I know crudités is. Anyway, I've always tried to be a gentleman to women, and perhaps to my detriment. You know, maybe I've missed out on some experiences. But, you know, in the end, when I'm looking at myself in the mirror, and God, I hope I'm not looking at myself in a mirror in the end. That would be scary. But anyway, you know, I can kind of look at myself with some respect or pride. And maybe in the grand scheme of things, that doesn't mean anything, but it does to me. And speaking of a guy who was a little bit of an unevolved dude, slightly sleazy guy, Alain Delon died recently. And just a truly amazing looking guy, almost unbelievably handsome and charismatic. He played Tom Ripley, the Patricia Highsmith character in the great 1960 movie Purple Noon, directed by René Clément. What a name. And he famously was in Jean-Pierre Melville's, God, these names. But anyway, Jean-Pierre Melville's Le Samurai, where he plays an assassin, and Le Flic, where he plays a cop. There's a flat-out, utter classic of a photo at a party where Alain Delon is sitting next to Marianne Faithfull, who is sitting next to, get this, Mick Jagger. And talk about being upstaged. Alain is just so cool, laughing, charming Marianne, while Mick Jagger is like Rain Man, sitting there just kind of staring at his cigarette, completely neutered. Speaking of Rain Man, always remember, Qantas never crash. Alain Delon had some kids, along with an unacknowledged one with the haunted figure Nico, the German rock star who was in the Velvet Underground. And I don't know, Alain Delon reportedly was a bit abusive. At the very least, he was absolutely tasteless with women sometimes. I mean, he had a bad upbringing for sure, but I never buy excuses for mistreating others. Alain Delon was 4 when his parents divorced and he was sent to a foster home. On some French TV show, the host Bernard Pivot, another awesome name alert, asks Alain, if God exists, what would you like to hear him say to you after your death? I mean, isn't that an absolute spot-on French question? I can't think of any other, like, it's as French of a question as that. But Alain says, since this is your greatest and deepest regret, I know, come, I'll take you to your father and mother so that for the first time, at last, you can see them together. I mean, I dare say that's one of the most beautiful quotes I've ever heard. And yes, life can be rough, but never be a bully. You can always act decent, you know. There's certain things where I'm like, sorry, but there are just no excuses for that, ever. Torment yourself, you know? Don't torment others. And just to wrap that up, that's not the only thing Alain Delon and I have in common. Wait a minute, what was the first thing? But we both succeeded in charming Marianne Faithfull. I met her at the previously mentioned Allen Ginsberg event at the Viper Room in the mid-90s where her and I had a moment. And you know, I rarely get like honestly annoyed by patients at work, but the other day there was this borderline kind of girl and she kind of yelled at me and disrespected me a little bit. And hey, if someone's psychotic, I cut them all the slack in the world. But if you're like knowingly nasty to me, I mean, I don't have to tolerate that shit. I'm working hard, man. I'm helping people out. And don't start fucking with me, okay? I'm being polite here. And if you can't be, then so be it. Let me know if you need anything. And I just walk out of the room. There are too many other patients that are actually appreciative and cooperative no matter what happens. And I always go the extra mile for them. And I've now made it a habit to like say goodbye to my patients when I'm leaving for the night. It's not required. Not many nurses do it, but it's just like, I want to acknowledge, hey, I spent the last 12 hours with you. You know, it's kind of meant something, okay? I see patients as a person, not just as a patient. I always try to put myself in their shoes, unless they wear like really small shoes, okay? I don't want to fuck up my feet. I mean, I only have 3 of them. Damn it, I let the cat out of the bag. Yes, I have 3 feet. And God, it's a real pain in the ass to buy shoes, let me tell you. And let me know if you find that cat, okay? But yeah, I just want them to feel like, hey, maybe this guy does care about me. And hey, you know what? I came up with the complete opposite of Bond, James Bond. This one I made up is as uncool as it gets. So if a girl at a bar or whatever asks you for your name, take a breath, look at her with the utmost sincerity, and say with absolute confidence, they call me Mr. Poopy Pants. And you know, I debated what was funnier, Mr. Poopy Pants or Senior Poopy Pants. Part of me thinks Senior is funnier. But yeah, that will immediately shut down any contact with that female. I mean, that's as unappealing a first line as they come. So let's mention a couple of Los Angeles movies. There's actually a brand new one called Skincare with Elizabeth Banks as an LA-based skincare specialist who slowly realizes someone is trying to destroy her career and her life. I admittedly didn't love the movie, but it has some great LA scenes, and some of it was shot in the offices at the Crossroads of the World in Hollywood. The first editing place I worked at was just across the street from Crossroads on Sunset Boulevard. But anyway, the plot doesn't really hold up, and there's some extremely predictable moments. It's not, like, bad per se. I think it's maybe worth watching just for the LA scenes. And actually, Elizabeth Banks is pretty solid in it. But yeah, it's not going to blow your mind. And another kind of fun, utterly stupid action comedy is Hollywood Homicide, the 2003 movie directed by the pretty pro Ron Shelton. It's got Harrison Ford and Josh Hartnett as 2 Hollywood cops investigating some rappers' murders. Harrison Ford is an older cop who's trying to sell real estate on the side. And Josh Hartnett is kind of a young dopey cop who's into yoga and philandering. But the Josh Hartnett character actually thinks he may actually want to become an actor. It's an enjoyable movie. Dwight Yoakam is one of the villains, and Smokey Robinson has a silly cameo as a cab driver. The first half is a bit stronger, and the ending is just kind of a confusing mess. It's not super suspenseful. But again, some amazing hardcore scenes of Los Angeles. And early in the movie, Harrison Ford and Josh Hartnett are like working late, and Harrison Ford says, "Let's get out of here before Bordner's closes." And Bordner's is a bar that's just been around for a while, man. I used to like it. It wasn't quite as divey as my favorite spots, but I remember it being pretty solid. It's off of Cherokee in Hollywood, which weirdly is near the crossroads of the world from the previously mentioned skincare. And the bar is still open, Bordner's, but I'm not sure if it's become crappy or what. And there's a scene where Internal Affairs is breaking open Josh Hartnett's locker, and there's a bunch of woo-woo yoga books and a book on Tantra. And this young kind of dopey cop looks at it and says, "Porno." But there is kind of a funny aspect to the fact that the Josh Hartnett character wants to be an actor. He kind of practices lines while they're on the job playing the brute Stanley Kowalski from the Tennessee Williams play, A Streetcar Named Desire. And Josh Hartnett is like planning a showcase where he's renting a little playhouse in Hollywood and inviting friends and agents to get some exposure and show off his acting skills. And an actor's showcase is such a Los Angeles thing. I remember in one of my acting classes, the teacher did a showcase and invited people to see us do our scenes. I was still developing at this stage. I wasn't yet the masterful actor that I became. And yes, once again to the Oscars, I, like George C. Scott, will politely refuse any awards given to me, but do let me know beforehand. Amatel, come on, please, call me back. But I remember at my showcase, and who can forget the showcase showdown on The Price is Right? But anyway, I did a scene with the girl from the David Rabe play Hurley Burley. I played Eddie, a struggling casting director in Hollywood who's also kind of a blowhard and a cokehead. I remember just trying to act really wired, which is not really hard for me. My default mode is panic. It's an okay play. It gets a little tiresome listening to these misogynistic coke fiends pontificate on random shit. But I do like the kind of dark underbelly vibe of Hollywood with drugs and sex and deception. Everyone is looking to get ahead. And if you want a friend in Hollywood, then get a dog. They made a movie version of Hurley Burley in 1998 with Sean Penn, Kevin Spacey, Meg Ryan, Gary Shandling, and the now ex-wife of Sean Penn, the always compelling Robin Wright. It's an okay movie, nothing too special. But get this, there was an off-Broadway production in 1984 with Seriously, Sit Down Here, William Hurt as Eddie, and also starring Harvey Keitel, okay, awesome, Sigourney Weaver, what is happening here, Judith Ivey, and Christopher Walken. And oh yeah, I almost forgot, it was directed by Mike Nichols. I mean, come on, that's as top level as you get. Frank Rich gave it a decent review in the New York Times, but yeah, the play kind of runs out of steam or theme or something. And a hurly-burly is kind of a disturbance or kerfuffle, of course, used by Shakespeare in Macbeth, in which one of the witches, I think that's good, says, "When the hurly-burly's done, when the battle's lost and won." And actually, Mike Nichols and David Rabe, I had to look up how to pronounce David Rabe. I thought it might maybe pronounce David Rabe, and I just found out that I've been actually saying Broccoli Rabe wrong my entire life, but I will continue to say Broccoli Rabe. But anyway, Mike Nichols and David Rabe teamed up before for the 1976 play called Streamers, produced by the legend Joseph Papp. It had Dolph Sweet in it, who I always had a sweet spot for because I grew up watching him as the cantankerous police chief on the TV show Gimme a Break. Streamers was also made into a movie in 1983 directed by Robert Altman with my beloved Matthew Modine. It's about soldiers, sexuality, racial tensions. I saw it when I was like too young to understand it. But they sing the Paratroopers song Beautiful Streamer in it, which is a tweaked version of the 1846 Parlor song Beautiful Dreamer by Stephen Foster. Anyway, here's some of that version. Beautiful streamer, open for me. Blue skies above and no canopy. Counted 9,000, waited too long. Reached for my ripcord, the darn thing was gone. So anyway, I think this episode is about done, and hopefully I correctly post it on Tuesday morning, but hey, don't people enjoy a little spontaneity or unpredictability? And let me ask you, what other podcasts would have Matthew Perry, Count Basie, NoFX, and Marianne Faithfull? And clearly, for my number of listeners, the public does not want to hear about that shit. But you know what? We're going to keep it up. For better or worse, till death do us part.